With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me, as always, is Mike Tagliere. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliere. NFL Tags, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. I think I'm doing better than you. Obviously, you know, you're trucking through this show. You don't feel so well. It's that time of the year where I think I've been sick like the last 2 weeks, but I don't think anybody wants to hear me complain about it anymore, so I just stopped. And I pushed through, and it's a good day for me because the Bears obviously won in you know, big fashion, and your Jets were... I really don't know what to say here. The Jets were just not very good at football today.
Yeah, you know, when I thought about coming into that game, when I looked at what the games would be this weekend, I basically assumed we essentially would probably skip over that game entirely because there really wouldn't be many fantasy takeaways from it, but we're going to have to talk about it at some point, unfortunately, very briefly. I'll probably limit you to 90 seconds, but essentially, I probably will ask you, in fact, I'll just ask it right now. Last week, after the Oakland game against the 49ers, I asked you whether or not you'd ever seen a team mail it in as badly as the Raiders did, and you said yes, you think you had seen other teams mail it in, so I'll ask it again. Have you ever seen a team totally mail it in the way the Jets did today?
Oh man, that game was bad. I didn't watch the whole game. Now, granted, I didn't. That was a game that I didn't prioritize in the Tagliere household today because there's only limited TVs. I don't have, you know, 10 different TVs. I have 4 to go off of. So I didn't choose that game to watch the majority of the day. So I did see parts of it. They looked terrible. I mean, I think I felt like it was a game that was just overlooked. It kind of reminded me of the Bears actually against the Dolphins, where it was like a team that they kind of just overlooked. I don't think they were able to game plan for the quarterback situation. They didn't know who they were going to play. I mean, not that Matt Barkley should have mattered very much, but Jesus, 41 points to the Bills. Like, what are you doing?
All right. So we've basically maxed out our discussion of the Jets for this podcast so that we don't annoy too many people. But I will say one thing. We are recording this on Sunday night. And I'm asking you, most people are probably going to listen to it. Let's be generous and say, oh, you know, maybe on their ride to work or something. But let's say most of them listen to it on their ride home. Will Todd Bowles still be the coach of the Jets when most people are listening to this podcast?
No, I think there's going to be multiple firings in the NFL this week. Actually, I think that Bowles is gone. And I also think that Dirk Cutter is going to get fired as well.
Look, man, he took over the play calling. Cutter did. And they gained like 500 yards.
Yeah, that was because the offense has been the problem, Dirk.
Right. That was an embarrassment. Well, frankly, I felt like today was, there were a lot of games that just surprised me. I really feel like I did not have a good sense of it, not even from a fantasy perspective. Just generally, I certainly didn't expect the Jets to do what they did. I did not expect the Patriots to do what they did. I did not expect the Falcons to do what they did. So we're going to talk about all of it. But why don't we start with your biggest general takeaway of the day?
My general takeaway of the day is that the fantasy community is still results oriented and it will continue to hurt many of them in the long run. I was triggered. I think that's the word I'm supposed to use. I don't know. My daughter tries to teach me these words at times and I really don't know how to use them, but I think I was triggered is the word she would use. And the fact that, like, when we see Eric Ebron score 3 touchdowns, okay, he saw 3 targets in the game, guys. Jack Doyle has played like legitimately 3 times the snaps that he has. He's seen more targets. So over the last 2 weeks, Eric Ebron has seen 6 targets, okay? So over a span of 16 games, let's do the math here. 3 targets a game times 16 equals 48 targets. I'm going to ask you a question here. We didn't talk about this before the show. We don't talk about anything before the show. All right, so over the last 5 years, there's been 60 tight ends, obviously, who have finished top 12. How many of those tight ends do you think have had 48 or less targets in the season?
Zero.
Absolutely zero. And as a matter of fact, there's only four of them who finished with fewer than 73 targets. I'm trying to tell people is look, the efficiency from that standpoint can't keep up. If he's only playing 18 to 25 snaps a game, his efficiency can't keep up. If he's only seeing three targets, it can't keep up. I don't care if Andrew Luck is playing the best football of his life, and he is, but it can't keep up. Sell Eric Ebron. So I'm just, today I got a little upset at a follower that mentioned to me, he's like, oh, you told me to drop Ebron. And first off, I never said to drop Ebron. What I said was that Doyle was the tight end to own in Indianapolis, and I still stand by that take. But again, I'm just not a results over process person. I'm a process over results. And obviously the results just won today.
Listen, man, if you're not expecting a jet sweep to Eric Ebron down at the 1 yard line, then I don't know what you're doing with yourself when you're doing passing. Yeah, in case you missed it, Ebron had two touchdown catches as well as the touchdown run, which I think he might have done once before. If I remember, because I'm 90% sure it cost me a fantasy matchup. Yeah, look, I'm inclined to agree with you. I actually, to be fair, rest of season coming into this week, I had Ebron lower than you did. You had him as a low-end tight end one. I had him just off the radar. I think I had him 13th, maybe 14th or something like that. So I do agree with you. I know it's frustrating. These things happen. But, Tags, I mean, look, you've been a fantasy analyst long enough. You should know when things like this happen, it is your fault. Okay, that's just how it works. I mean, I don't know, whatever your daughter wants to say about it, that's just how it works, buddy. It is your fault, and frankly, I'm a little annoyed that you didn't see this one coming. So look, I'm totally inclined to agree with you. Ebron has value. He's a startable tight end, but I also would still prefer to own Jack Doyle rest of season. If you saw, I mean, one of the just looked like a total broken coverage. There was no receiver within 15 yards of him, and another was a jet sweep. So again, I agree with you, but you know, part of being a fantasy analyst is dealing with people's frustrations. So.
For sure. No, I get that. But I was just mad that I never said to drop Ebron first off. And second off, you can't continue to project things like this with three targets.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. So we're going to keep going to our winners and losers. But before we do, I do want to remind everyone about our latest giveaway, the signed Dalvin Cook helmet. You can submit an entry in 30 seconds by just going to fantasypros.com/contest. That'll tell you exactly what to do. And it's a little different this time. You'll actually need to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which frankly, if you want awesome fantasy advice, you probably should do anyway. Now, like all our signed giveaways, this one comes from Pristine Auction. And if you like football memorabilia, you really need to be going to pristineauction.com pretty frequently. They auction off hundreds of guaranteed authentic items every single day. Because there are so many auctions, you can find ridiculous deals. Yesterday, I saw a Marshall Faulk signed helmet for $98, a Joe Montana signed 49ers jersey for $132, and an Alvin Kamara signed football for $87. And the best thing about all those prices is that's all. That's all you're paying. You're not paying to register. You're not paying every time you submit a bid. You're just paying when you win a bid. So go to pristineauction.com now. I guarantee you're going to love it. That's PRISTINE auction.com. And don't forget to tell them that you heard about them from Fantasy Pros so we can keep doing things like the Dalvin Cook helmet giveaway. All right, Tags, let's get into it. Who is your biggest winner of the day?
Biggest winner of the day, Mitch Trubisky. He played the best football game of his career, and it kind of stems off of last week. You know, I mentioned it last week. The stats didn't match it, but Trubisky played actually really well against Buffalo. This game, his stock went through the roof, and one thing I was looking at when doing my rest of season rankings, it's like, I asked my wife, I was like, why don't we, I start talking these things through because it helps me bounce ideas off of her. And she'll tell me if I'm crazy. She legitimately will tell me I'm nuts. And I said, Trubisky, why isn't he looked at like a Cam Newton? We view Cam Newton as an elite fantasy quarterback, even though he has bad games from time to time. Trubisky side by side has 2,304 passing yards. Newton 2,086. Trubisky has 19 passing touchdowns. Newton has 17. Trubisky has 320 rushing yards and three touchdowns. Newton has 352 and four. So Trubisky has been every bit the fantasy quarterback than Cam Newton has, and he looked better than ever with Allen Robinson back in the lineup. Anthony Miller's gotten involved. Taylor Gabriel hasn't caught in a deep ball in a couple weeks. They're getting Adam Shaheen back soon. The only tough matchup I saw on the remainder of the schedule is next week, actually, against Minnesota. That's going to be a brutal game for Trubisky. Fortunately, he doesn't have to play them again until week 17 when the fantasy season is over. But looking at the schedule, I think Trubisky pans out as a top 12 quarterback, and honestly, you can make the argument that he's top 8 for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, so I'm sure I didn't watch this game quite as closely as you did, but, and you've said it, regardless of the numbers, which were incredibly impressive, 23 completions out of 30 pass attempts, 355 yards, and three touchdowns. I mean, this is by far the best I've ever seen him look in his career, and I think he's just been getting better and better. Now, look, I don't want to you know, pour any cold water on it or anything. But this is a fairly good matchup in light of the fact that Darius Slay was out, right? Especially that the secondary for Detroit is not good. And Robinson played great. I'm really excited to see Anthony Miller play great. I'll ask you a little bit more specifically about him when we get to that game in our game recaps. But yeah, look, I agree. I mean, Trubisky has done very little to make you think he's not a strong QB1 at this point going forward. And he, again, even in a game where they controlled the whole time, he still throws in 18 yards rushing. I mean, that's basically the equivalent of however your scoring system is. It's like an extra 50 yards passing, 60 yards passing. You know, that's not nothing at all. So I agree. He is a pretty big winner today. And he really, really, I mean, you've basically said it, but it's correct. This is as good as I've ever seen him look. For me, my biggest winner was Kerryon Johnson. I mean, look, last week I got a little worried, I'll be honest. I mean, he saw the same snap count as Theo Riddick, just 56%. And here, despite being down all game, he dominates the running back touches, 14 for 51 and a touchdown on the ground. He gets six catches for 38 yards and a touchdown through the air. I'm wondering, does this change your rest of season outlook on Kerryon Johnson, given how involved he was in a game where the Lions were behind pretty much the entire game?
I mean, it doesn't hurt. And knowing that Theo Riddick last week got eight targets and he got five, obviously he's going to be involved there. But the question is, he got banged up towards the end of this game. He took a hit. They kept riding him out. Like, the thing is, the Bears defense was all over this run game. Like, there was nothing to be found. Kerryon Johnson had a couple splash plays, and, you know, he looks like a good running back. But the thing is he's still going to be involved in a timeshare. They're still going to give LeGarrette Blount a lot of goal line opportunities. Theo Riddick is still going to be the primary pass catcher. So he's in the mix for sure. I still have him as a right around that RB15, RB16 range. I do want to see if that injury was aggravated, because he came into this injury, this game with an ankle injury that he was nursing. So I don't know if he re-aggravated that towards the end of the game, but it's something we'll definitely pay attention to.
Yeah, and frankly, for me, he was lower. I had him low. I think you had him 17 coming into the week. I had him about 22. So I think probably for me, the impact of his performance is a little greater than it is for you. How about your biggest loser today, Tex?
Biggest loser has to be, I was going to say Ryan Fitzpatrick, because I believe that not only is he going to lose that starting job, I think Dirk Cutter is going to get fired. I think that whoever they put in charge is going to say, you know what, let's go with the kid, because we have to find out what we have here. Because, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick's a journeyman. He's a veteran. He's moved around from team to team for a reason. Dirk Cutter was trying to save his job. If he's getting fired, I don't think Fitzpatrick hangs on to that job. But my biggest loser is Adrian Peterson. In a game that they led throughout, in a game against the Bucs that had been allowing tons and tons and tons of production to opposing run games, Peterson had a lackluster game, and it comes down to missing those three offensive linemen. There's no threats in the passing game. It's an ugly situation, and at this point in his career, he's not going to be able to overcome some of those offensive line injuries. So, you know, looking at his upcoming schedule, it's not that good, especially knowing he had probably one of the best matchups, you know, over the rest of the season today against the Bucs and didn't perform. It's a little worrisome in a game that, you know, that game script really fit his role. Like, they were in the lead that entire game.
He got the work. I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, what are you supposed to do? They have one healthy offensive lineman. You know, it's just really impossible to do. Now, they will keep feeding him the ball. They do not want to throw the ball down the field. That is readily apparent from every single game that they've played. But, you know, I agree. This is one time where I think the volume probably is not going to equal production. And it's a shame, because he really has been running well this year. We've talked about it many times. But that offensive line is just so decimated. I don't see how he's going to overcome it. For me, and this is, I really want to ask you about this, Tex, because we've talked about this guy a lot. It's Jarvis Landry. I mean, five targets, two catches, 22 yards. We can throw David Njoku in there too, but Landry is sort of a bigger name. This is a great matchup for slot receivers. You know, Atlanta struggles against them. He's had more than 69 yards receiving just once in his last seven games. I mean, we have sort of steadfastly kind of maintained that the breakout's going to come. I mean, what are you doing at this point with the guy?
Yeah, that's the thing, is we often follow targets, and that's the thing. Targets typically equal production, but it's clear, you know, kind of looking at his production this season, it's been declining, and especially with good matchups as of late. You know, they had Pittsburgh, they had Tampa Bay, they had Atlanta. These were all good matchups. These were games where he was supposed to dominate, and he had a good game against Tampa, but outside of that, he's been... I mean, once you get outside the top, you know, 15 wide receivers, a lot of them are pretty volatile. So you can make the case that, you know, Jarvis Landry is still arguably a top 20 fantasy wide receiver. I think he's actually the number 19 wide receiver right now in fantasy football on the season. So, I mean, even though he has been up and down, it just kind of goes to show that a lot of wide receivers are kind of this way. The schedule is going to get a bit tougher. So, I mean, I can't say that I love him, but I also can't say that I hate him too much, just because the options that are around him, would you rather have someone like, I don't know, Cooper Kupp got hurt today, so that's a bad one. But would you rather have someone like Julian Edelman, Amari Cooper, AJ Green. Like, these are wide receivers that I'd probably still take Landry over, but it's really close.
Yeah, Edelman left today's game as well. It did not look serious, and they have a bye next week. It looked like his ankle, so I'm just going to assume he's going to be all right. So I would take Edelman over him rest of season. But I agree, I would probably take Landry, at this point over AJ Green, who, you know, Adam Schefter tweeted out is probably out until December, which isn't that surprising. You and I have talked about it, and certainly over Cooper, who had a really nice debut with the Cowboys, but I don't think he's at that level. But for me, it's troubling to see, Landry just consistently put up these quiet numbers. I agree, the targets are there, not today, only five, but it's troubling to me. But I agree, we say this all the time. When you get to that range, there isn't that much of a difference between receiver A and receiver B. They're all kind of lumped in there, so you do generally follow the targets. But for me, again, this is a game I really thought that this was the breakout. This is when it was going to come, and the fact that it didn't kind of makes me sad. Let's get into the game recaps now. Obviously, we'll start with the Thursday night game. Steelers 52, Panthers 21. And if you watch the first drive of that game where the Panthers marched right down the field, that outcome seems a little crazy. Let's talk briefly about Big Ben for a second. He had a Drew Brees-esque game, right? 22 of 25, 328 yards, 5 touchdowns. Now, we all know about home road splits for Ben, right? That's always been a big deal in his career. 203 touchdowns coming in at home, 147 on the road. 4 of his remaining 6 games are on the road, including the next 2 at Jacksonville, which isn't quite as scary as it used to be, and at Denver. How do you feel about him, generally speaking, going forward as a QB1?
Roethlisberger, I had been worried about him. Like, I'm not going to lie, because if you watched his games, even though the fantasy production was there, if you watched them over the first half of the season, Ben Roethlisberger was not playing good football. But he arguably played the best football I've ever seen him play on Thursday night. Like, he was lights out, fantastic. His deep ball was on point, because, like, over the first 8 games, he had been one of the least accurate passers on deep balls in the NFL, and that's something that, you know, him and Antonio Brown usually connected on, and they're starting to connect again. Juju Smith-Schuster obviously looks good. James Conner is, you know, he's replaced Le'Veon Bell, and I think that we don't really need to say anything more about that. It's been pounded to death. So,
you sure you don't want to spend 20 minutes talking about the Le'Veon Bell James Conner situation?
Don't want to do that. But yeah, no, Ben Roethlisberger, I definitely have a lot more confidence after watching the way he played on Thursday. It's obviously just one game, but it's a step in the right direction. So I do have him in my QB1 rankings for the rest of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And his playoff schedule for the fantasy playoffs, I believe, is at Oakland, home against New England, and at the Saints. Not necessarily his 2 road matchups aren't that prohibitive. So, and he'll need points against the Saints, despite the fact that their defense is playing well. So I agree, I'm pretty bullish. He was amazing in this game against a fairly decent defense. And let's talk about the Panthers for a second. And, you know, I don't know if you got any heat for this, but, you know, we have poo-pooed you more than me, to be fair, a little bit, Christian McCaffrey. And he had a monstrous game, 3 touchdowns. And I don't know why he was in the game as long as he was, but whatever. Now, look, it was a tough matchup. Steelers have been tough against the run. They allow the 2nd fewest fantasy points to running backs, the 3rd fewest receptions. So, you know, talk to me about your outlook on Christian McCaffrey going forward.
Well, what's funny is that I made a bet with Bobby at the beginning of the season in regards to Joe Mixon versus Christian McCaffrey. And I've always said that McCaffrey wasn't someone that was going to lose your fantasy league, but I also said that he wasn't someone that was going to win your fantasy league, because I don't think he's ever going to score more than like 8 touchdowns in a season. So, we made that bet, and I talked to Bobby after that game, and I said, I still think McCaffrey's overrated. And he's like, I actually agree with you. He's like, the holes that he was running through, it's like Pittsburgh didn't care about him running the ball, and obviously it didn't have a major impact in the game because they got stomped. But seriously, he was running through holes, and I put out a tweet saying that Peyton Barber could have ran through some of those holes that they were creating on the offensive line. And you know, it was a tough matchup. Pittsburgh has been one of the best run defenses in the NFL, so I don't know what really happened to Pittsburgh, if they just said, you know what, we're going to basically just stick in a zone and sit back and just basically play a prevent defense and not allow these big plays to them. I don't know what they were doing, but either way, McCaffrey produced, and that's all you can ask for as a fantasy owner. So I did have him ranked as my number, I think I still had him in my top 12 running backs this week, just because the running back position is so ugly, but I was obviously wrong in this one.
What about rest of season? Let's put a number on it, rest of season. I think you had him 12 coming into the game. So it's not as if you're like, no, I hate Christian McCaffrey, avoid him or anything. You've had him, I think, as an RB1, even in standard leagues. Where do you have him going forward?
I have, and I actually moved him ahead of Joe Mixon going forward, because Joe Mixon is still not being used in the passing game, even coming out of the bye. It's disappointing to see the way, like, the Bengals are blundering the situation. Like, they're not playing it right. So I did move McCaffrey ahead of Mixon. I have McCaffrey currently as my number 10 running back in standard formats. I would still rather have someone like Leonard Fournette than him, just because I think Fournette's going to have more scoring opportunities. And, like, over the course of the season, Fournette's going to be a little, I think he's going to score more and he offers more breakout potential, whereas McCaffrey is a safer option than Fournette. But again, if we're talking about players like up here, I'm looking for someone that's going to like win me my fantasy league. And Christian McCaffrey, as much as good as his last couple weeks have been, if you look before that, he was just kind of like a game manager fantasy running back. That's basically how I could best describe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me. I've been more bullish on him than you, and I haven't been crazy. I had him at 7, even in standard coming in. I bounce. He's a guy who I find myself constantly reevaluating. Every week, I feel like he has the most delta between where he was and where he goes, because it's hard to get a good read on him. Because, again, there are times where he's kind of completely irrelevant. He's just not given the work. And there are other times where he totally dominates the game. I think regardless of anything, you know, if we're down on him, if we're high on him, we both have him as a solid RB1 going forward at this point. So to the extent you want to yell at us, just, you know, yell about Eric Ebron or something else, something that's way more fun. All right, we touched on it briefly, but let us talk about your boys. Bears 34, Lions 22. It was not that close. Lions scored a couple touchdowns toward the end. Totally dominant performance. We talked about Trubisky. We can talk about the passing game if you want, because there's, you know, Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller have huge games. But I do want to know, you look at the score and you would have sort of, without looking at the box score, you would have expected Jordan Howard got a ton of work, but just 11 carries for 21 yards. Tariq Cohen gets a touchdown. What are your thoughts on Jordan Howard going forward in a game with a positive game script? This is where he really should eat.
I've been saying for a long time to sell Jordan Howard. He looks like crap. Like that's like speaking as real as I can get. He looks like he's running through mud. He hasn't looked good in this offense. He's not running well out of the shotgun. He's not running well without a fullback in front of him. And it's weird because Matt Nagy has been relatively consistent in his like doing things outside the box. But with Jordan Howard, he doesn't. Like, they run him up the gut. I think James Coe and NFL Next Gen stats said it was like 70% of the time he's running in between the tackles. And he's not succeeding. Like, again, he just looks like crap. I have like a thread with my friends. Like, we go through and we talk about the Bears and they complain, you know, play to play. Me, I'm not like overreactive of one game or two games here and there, or a play here and there, I should say. But we were talking about this and like, Jordan Howard, just like, they were like, well, why wouldn't we have traded him? And I'm like, well, he's on a rookie contract. He was drafted in the 5th round. Like, he's just too cheap, and he's a clock killer. That's what he is. If the Bears get a lead, they're going to use him in a clock killing mode, and that's basically what they do.
But what about today? They had the lead the whole day.
But I don't think the Bears ran a whole lot of plays in this game. That's basically what it comes down to, because Tariq Cohen only had 7 carries. Like, I'd be interested to see the total play count. I haven't looked at that. That's something I take a look at, like the last thing I'll look at when I'm doing my primer like write-ups. But I don't think they ran very many plays in this game. They didn't need the ball on offense. They were pretty efficient in terms of that. But this game wasn't even as close as you thought. Like, Cody Parkey, he missed 2 field goals. He missed 2 extra points. He had like a Mason Crosby type day. So, you know, he might be out of town after this game because like he cost them a lot of points. But either way, the Bears passing game, it's going to be frustrating because they have so many options. And I always knew that it was going to be somewhat of an issue for Detroit because the Bears don't have one guy in the offense that they traditionally go to. Like, Allen Robinson is clearly the best wide receiver of the bunch, but they have so many other options in the offense, and the Detroit Lions defense, they tend to try and take away the opposing number one player. This week, without Darius Slay, it was always going to be tough to do that with Allen Robinson, who he's just awesome. And people continually underrate this guy. But either way, it was a great show by the Bears offense. In regards to Detroit, not so much. Matthew Stafford was off. His overall numbers aren't terrible in terms of 274 and 2. He threw 2 picks. He took 6 sacks, so it's now 16 sacks over the last 2 weeks without Golden Tate. He's missing him over the middle of the field. He missed some easy throws to Galladay, to Marvin Jones. It just doesn't look good, man. And he's someone that, honestly, I was going through the rest of the season schedule, and he's almost borderline droppable at this point. If you look at the Lions' schedule going forward, after the Bears, they're going to play Carolina. That's okay. But then they play the Bears again, the Rams, but here's the fantasy playoffs for Matthew Stafford. At Arizona, the number 2 defense against fantasy quarterbacks. At Buffalo, the number 3 fantasy defense against quarterbacks. And then week 16, Minnesota. You're not going to want to play him in any of those matchups. So, I mean, if you have Matthew Stafford and you can get anything for him in a trade, I would do so.
I mean, look, I'm gonna take off the borderline. I don't think Matthew Stafford needs to be owned. I you know, especially not now. I think I have him maybe at QB 16, 17 going forward. I mean, he's a bye week filler. That's all that he is, especially without Tate. It was just a terrible game, really, all around for the Lions offense. And frankly, I had Stafford as my bust this week, so it was a little annoying to see just the late, because he was terrible for the whole game, and then he got a couple of late touchdowns, but he really didn't play well. I will note that Marvin Jones, Tags, I'm sure you're watching this closely, apparently he left with a knee injury. I don't know if it was serious or...
He was being examined on the side. They didn't really say too much about it, because like I started to move into other games because that game was completely out of hand, but he was being examined on the trainer's table. I don't know how serious it was. But Kenny Galladay led the way with 13 targets, so he's obviously back in the conversation.
Yeah, out of curiosity, were most of those targets... I don't know when Jones left this game, because...
Oh, it was late in the game. It was the fourth quarter.
Oh, okay, that's great then, because Galladay seeing 13... I mean, I believe he had seen just 7 targets combined over his last 3 games or something like that.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, it was just 5 targets over the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great, frankly, to see that he got 13 targets, 6 receptions, 78 yards, and a touchdown. And again, you mentioned Stafford missed him a few times with just... poor throws. So encouraging for Kenny Galladay, and monitor Marvin Jones's injury. The Lions are hosting the Panthers next week. Saints 51, Bengals 14. I mean, the game was over by halftime.
It was over like after the first snap. Come on.
It was just ridiculous. I don't really think there's that much of a takeaway on either side, but let us try. The Saints, they're just an unstoppable force, man. Drew Brees is usually slightly worse on the road, but again, he and Ben both 22 of 25, 265 yards and 3 passing touchdowns. He also ran for a touchdown. The Bengals defense is terrible, and they are down Vontaze Perfect and Nick Vigil. They're just terrible. Let's talk about Mark Ingram, because you, I believe, have been kind of high on him, and I think you talked about him earlier this week. Big game here, 13 carries, 104 yards, 3 catches for 58 yards and the touchdown. That came relatively early. That was not clock killing time where they were going to him or anything like that. You're bullish on him going forward or what?
Yeah, I am. I'm not going to go over the top. Like, I have him as my number 15 running back for the rest of the season. He's clearly in a timeshare in Alvin Kamara. Like, every time Kamara gets the ball, like, the dude just makes it look so easy. Like, when he scores his touchdown, it's like he's usually walking into the end zone, and that's something that doesn't happen in the NFL very often. But yeah, it's a very concentrated offense in terms of like who the ball goes to. You should know that Traquan Smith, I think my biggest takeaway here is that Traquan Smith is probably droppable. And that's crazy because he actually played the most snaps of any Saints wide receiver in this game. He's just not getting the targets. Like, he didn't see a single target today. That's not going to work. He played 50 snaps, but still. Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, this is the offense right there. Every now and then you'll get Ben Watson mixed in. Mark Ingram, happy to see a big game out of him. I actually thought it could have been even bigger just because, like, when you looked at the carries that could have amounted for the Saints, and they did, they actually ran the ball 47 times. I thought we could have gotten near 35 carries between Kamara and Ingram. So I thought Ingram could have approached 20 carries in this game, but they took their foot off the throttle with the starters. They put in Dwayne Washington for 11 carries against the Bengals. They're just a bad football team right now. And without AJ Green, Andy Dalton's not going to be able to do much. Tyler Boyd was contained. And it was something I worried about too, because like the Saints, the way they handled Adam Thielen a couple weeks ago, they actually brought a safety down and they were double teaming him. Like, I haven't gone back to watch how they handled Boyd on like the All-22 film. That'll be up tomorrow. But I'll go back and watch that game to see how they did it, because if the Saints are like adapting, you know, to opposing offenses, it's really smart, and it's a defense that you could probably trust going forward.
Yeah, I do want to know, because I was wondering about this, whether or not it was Saints specific or whether or not you just think, absent AJ Green, every single skill player for fantasy purposes on the Bengals needs to be downgraded.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I said I would have liked Tyler Boyd in this game more if AJ Green was on the field.
Yeah, and I think that you can think about that going forward. Frankly, I mean, you know, Mixon played well, to be fair. It's a tough run defense. He had 11 carries for 61 yards, 2 catches for 24 yards, but you talked about him. They should be using him a lot, especially in the passing game, and they don't. And frankly, they were just out of this game so early that he never got the work, which was disappointing. And again, yeah, a disappointing effort from Tyler Boyd. John Ross does, you know, get the touchdown, but I assume he's far from relevancy in your mind.
Kind of. I mean, this was going to be a tougher matchup without AJ Green against the Saints defense that has speed. Like, Marshawn Lattimore was out there. He doesn't travel into the slot, so I figured he'd see a lot of Lattimore. They put a safety, shade of safety his way. It's so stupid. Like, I could go on a long rant about why Cincinnati is the, like, legitimately one of the dumbest teams in the NFL in terms of like what they have and what they don't know they have in Joe Mixon. They only ran 43 plays in this game because they just lost the time of possession like over and over, and that was a concern of mine. But Mixon played 29 snaps. He was targeted twice. They did use him on one design pass play to him. It was like a screen, and it worked. But again, we're not going to do that. You know, we're down AJ Green. We have John Ross. We have CJ Uzama. We have Cody Kohr. Let's target these guys instead.
Look, buddy, I know you've got a great rant in you on the Bengals, but why don't you save it for like 10 years from now when Marvin Lewis is still screwing things up?
and still has no playoff wins.
I mean, still has no plaid, but you know what? Every year you're like, oh, this is the year, this is the year, and then it comes out. We've signed Marvin Lewis to Yeah, it's just, it's awful. I would feel bad for Bengals fans, but as a Jets fan, I'm kind of on the lowest rung of the ladder there, so I'll spare that. Before we get to our next game, I do want to tell everybody about another sponsor of today's show, Lisa Mattress. Now, as you can probably hear, and as Tags mentioned at the beginning, I'm a little under the weather, so I'm really thankful that I own a Lisa Mattress so that I can get a good night's sleep. Good night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster, it prevents burnout, it helps you make better decisions, it improves your memory, and it helps you make, overall, fewer mistakes. And to design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30-plus years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Now, it is the most comfortable mattress that you've ever slept on, but we're really proud to have them as a sponsor because it really is a fantastic company. Lisa's mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody, so they have this great thing called the 110 program. That's where they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 26,000 mattresses and counting. And while the mattress donations are awesome, that's not all Lisa does. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell, and they're committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. With our offer code, you can get $160 off a Lisa mattress. Just go to lisa.com/fantasypros. That's LEESA.com/fantasypros. All right, Tags, let's move on. Browns 28, Falcons 16. I mentioned it at the top of the show. Pretty shocked by this one. Matt Ryan has been playing great lately. You've noticed that. You've talked about it. The Browns were down EJ Gaines. They were down Christian Kirksey. And Denzel Ward was questionable coming in. He did play with his hip injury. But let's start with the Falcons. What are your takeaways from the team?
It's just a game I think they overlooked. I think this happens with NFL teams from time to time, and that's why they say any given Sunday. Just because there's just, you know, Atlanta coming off a big road win against Washington last week. You know, I think people expected a lot from Atlanta, just thinking like, oh, they overcame the road woes and this and that. Again, I just think it was a game that started off weird. You know, Cleveland jumped out to an early lead, and Atlanta's game plan just didn't work out the way they wanted it to. It's hard to explain how Atlanta lost this game because, like, it seems like they're superior in almost every way, but Nick Chubb kind of took over the game.
He was awesome. 20 carries, 176 yards, and a touchdown. A 92-yard touchdown run sets a franchise record, I believe. 3 catches for 33 yards and a touchdown. Let's talk about Chubb briefly. I do want to touch on something on the Falcons, but let's talk about Chubb. I mean, where is he at this point? How are you feeling about him going forward?
I mean, he's approaching RB1 status. He was a guy that even when Carlos Hyde left, I remember talking about the waiver wire, and I said I'd spend all my fab budget on him just because it's rare to find a running back who's going to receive, you know, 15-plus touches a game on the waiver wire. And, you know, under Mayfield, it's been a competent offense. They haven't been elite by any means, but I think that a lot of that comes down to the play calling, some of the injuries they've dealt with, and the offensive line not blocking, whatever the case is. But Nick Chubb has been every bit the workhorse that you thought he'd be. Ever since coming into that starting role, he hasn't totaled, I think, less than 18 carries in a game. He saw 3 targets in this game compared to 4 for Duke Johnson. So, I mean, Duke Johnson looks like he's still in the same role that he was even with Hugh Jackson. I know so many people were excited about last week's performance, and I said don't get over the top excited about that. It seems like this is Chubb's backfield. They want him to be used. He is the clear-cut workhorse. He's going to be on the field a ton. And we haven't seen him in, like, a really, really, really negative game script just yet. But at the same time, is the Browns defense, are they good enough to keep them from that happening? So, yeah, Nick Chubb, man, approaching RB1 status.
Yeah, absolutely. You and I both had him at 15th coming in. We were both going to be moving him up for the very reasons that you said. And that's a good mention about Duke Johnson. He does score the touchdown here, but again, just 7 touches. It's just, it's not easy to be a consistent fantasy asset in any type of league when your usage is that little. You know, I think we were all getting a little excited about him last week, but we threw a little bit of cold water on it on Sunday because it really wasn't. It wasn't the usage. It was just the production, and really usage is what we want to see. We did talk about Jarvis Landry already, so let's briefly, I do want to touch on one more thing with the Falcons. Well, maybe two. One is that I'm really not that you're ever worried about Julio Jones for crying out loud, but not only was it great to see him get a 1-yard touchdown, but also several targets near the goal line. I definitely saw at least one other one from at the 1 or 2 yard line. So it's really good that that's kind of a focus when they get down there, and hopefully we will never have to worry about him scoring touchdowns. But I do want to ask you about Calvin Ridley. 5 targets, 3 catches, 37 yards. Most of that came on a 31-yard catch. He's got 54 yards or less in 5 of his last 6 games. Is this just an example of, yeah, he's just another guy who kind of throw in the wide receiver 3 bucket and there's not much difference between them?
Yes, that's exactly what he is. And that's the thing. He's going to benefit from Julio. Like, if Julio has a down week or if he's shadowed by a top-tier cornerback that, like, can at least least limit his production. Maybe someone like Marshawn Lattimore, maybe someone like Casey Hayward. These are guys that typically, you know, they may not shut Julio down, but they might limit Julio. And that's when you want to look at Calvin Ridley, because he's the Falcons have been really good about exploiting a team's weakness this year. Like, they've been really, really good about it. Austin Hooper's had really good games against teams that have really struggled against tight ends. It's almost like they're actually adapting, which is something I always wait for coaching staffs to do. And the Falcons have done a really good job of that this year. So for Calvin Ridley, I think better days will come. It's just Julio Jones has had a pretty good schedule here recently, and he's been able to beat the cornerbacks he's matched up against. He always can, but the fact that they lost this game, like when you talk about Julio getting more goal line opportunities, yes, it's good for fantasy football, but if they lose this game, does it cause them to look to go back to the way that they were doing things? Because obviously the other way was working. So I don't know, man. This, like I said, this game, I don't want to take away too much from it, just because I just feel like it was a game that Atlanta kind of overlooked their opponent.
Yeah, I think that that's fair, and I think that might have happened with our next game too, with the Titans 34 and the Patriots 10. I mean, again, another game that just didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm not sure if it was because Mike Vrabel is the Titans coach and he played for it, so maybe he knew, or whether or not they were just looking ahead toward their bye. But let's talk about it a little bit. Let's start with the Patriots side, because it's a little more interesting. Gronkowski misses another game. I really don't know what you can expect from him going forward, but we can talk about that if you want. Sony Michel does very little. He does return, but he does very little in a game that the Patriots pretty much trailed right from the get-go. So he was game scripted out, and the Titans allowed the fourth fewest fantasy points to running backs. We talked about Julian Edelman. I do want to ask you about Brady. When we did our half-season awards, I mentioned Brady was the most overrated fantasy asset this year, and he really continued that trend. He has struggled on the road. He's averaging, before this game, just 242 yards, 1.5 touchdowns per game coming in. Here, just 21 of 41 for 254 yards in this game, no touchdowns. I mean, what do you think about Brady going forward?
I moved him down to my QB 14 for the rest of the season. I've moved him down quite a bit. I'm done with Tom Brady in fantasy football coming into this week. So there had been, this is something I put in the primer, there had been 75 quarterback performances of 22 plus points this year. Brady has one of them. So he's not even offering you the upside that you want. Like, I mean, I understand that maybe, like, okay, well, he's not delivering the upside, then you want him to deliver consistency. He hasn't even really been doing that. And traditionally, Brady has really struggled in the month of December when it comes to, I don't know if it's the Patriots just taking it easy, not having him throw a whole bunch. Maybe it's him. It's divisional games. Whatever the case may be, Brady has just not been around in December as of late, and then he kind of turns it on in the playoffs. So I'm moving on from Brady. Like, I would rather own Mitch Trubisky going forward.
Yeah, that's actually the name I was going to throw out for you right there. And I think I agree with you. I'm not sure. I mean, 14 just sounds so low. I'm trying just in my mind.
Let's talk about it. Like, Ben Roethlisberger, would you rather own Brady?
Yeah, no, Roethlisberger.
All right, Breeze.
Oh, Breeze, for sure.
Trubisky.
I honestly, it's the name that stuck out to me. I think I'd probably rather own Trubisky. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, you go to Russell Wilson, Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, all these guys, and that's what I'm saying. Brady ends up at 14 for me. He's right in front of Philip Rivers, and I honestly should probably put Rivers ahead of Brady.
Yeah, I can't argue with that analysis, frankly. It's just the number kind of jumps out to me, right?
Coming into this week, before he flopped this week, Tom Brady was the number 16 quarterback in points per game, and it's not like he's had a terrible season. It's just the NFL has become more of, it's like there's a lot bigger games coming, and it's like you need the upside of some of these quarterbacks, and Brady just hasn't been there without Gronk. Now, as for Gronk, I still think that he's a buy. I still think if you can get him for like a wide receiver three on your team, like let's say that someone would take Calvin Ridley for Rob Gronkowski at this point, I would do that trade. And the reason I would is because you look at the tight end position, and like outside of Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, I guess we could throw George Kittle in there. Outside of them, there is nobody, like legit zero players you could say like 100% confidence you start every single week. So knowing that Gronk, he has the bye week coming up, knowing that he's had now a couple weeks to rest up, I think that they kind of did think that they could beat the Titans without him. And the Titans were a really good defense against tight ends anyways. But I would buy Gronk knowing that the potential upside you get there, that's league winning potential upside.
Well, I mean, I do want to make it clear. When you said Gronkowski was a buy, I kind of cringed a little bit because of the injury. But frankly, if you're telling me that the price that you could pay for Gronkowski is a wide receiver three, then sure.
People are dropping him. People are dropping him.
Well, that's insane, frankly. I mean, I get it a little bit. But at some point, you know, fantasy owners need to just take a chill pill. I mean, I get it. But, you know, relax, everybody. It's been frustrating. He's usually frustrating, too. And this is the first year where he's both been injured and not performed when he's been healthy. But if you can get Gronkowski for a wide receiver three in that range, yeah, I would feel fine about doing it. But if you have to pay anything close to more than that, I would avoid, just because I really don't know what they're going to do at this point. On the other side of the ball, Derrick Henry does score the two touchdowns, but it seemed more like the game script just favored him towards the end. He still only saw 11 carries as opposed to Deion Lewis, who saw 20. I assume you're willing to just kind of write this one off to the game script, and Lewis is still your guy to own in the backfield going forward.
Sell Derrick Henry. He has four touchdowns in the last three games, but the touches, it's a 70-30 split is what it is, and it's not on Derrick Henry's side. So over the last 3 weeks, Deion Lewis has 64 touches to just 33 for Derrick Henry. Now, granted, he's going to get some goal line work in there. They're going to mix in the two, with Henry getting most of the goal line work, but I don't want to rely on a touchdown-dependent running back in the fantasy playoffs. It's like going back to the DeMarco days. Like when you had DeMarco and Derrick Henry, could you start that guy every week? No, you couldn't.
No, absolutely. And now look, to be as fair as possible, he ran well in this game. I mean, 11 for 58, that's not bad. And Lewis didn't really, you know, do much with his carries. 20 for 57, I want to acknowledge that. But yeah, I mean, this morning, frankly, I dropped Derrick Henry in a league just because I think that's where he is. I don't see him. If you can trade him for something, I would be more than happy to do that. But I agree. He's just sort of a touchdown dependent guy at this point. It is Lewis's backfield, and I expect that to continue going forward. Before we leave the game, Corey Davis finally breaks out. 10 targets, 7 catches, 125 yards, and a touchdown. He had been held to 65 yards or less in 7 of 8 games. I figured Stephon Gilmore would be on him, but I mean, look, you had him at 35th coming in. Does this move the needle now? Or are you like, oh, yay, Corey Davis breakout game?
Yeah, I like Davis. I had him at 35 because I felt like I was going to wait until after this week, and then I was going to move him up because the schedule does lighten up a little bit, because no wide receiver had performed against the Patriots recently. Like, Stephon Gilmore had been shut down, and they did have him on Corey Davis. And after the game, Stephon Gilmore came out and said, he's like, Davis just beat me. Like, he ran great routes. Like, there was a lot of things he did for a young guy that he was surprised with, and that he just got open. And he's like, I'll take blame for that. So Corey Davis just schooled Stephon Gilmore. That's what happened. And Corey Davis has always been a good receiver, and that's the part where, when he doesn't perform, that's where it's really, really frustrating, because, like, Mike, you know, good players perform no matter what. And that's not always the case in fantasy football. It's the same thing with Amari Cooper. These are two very good players, and it's like, you know, Corey Davis was at least getting targets, but they weren't very catchable targets. In this game, Mariota's touchdown to him was a beautiful pass. Like, it was a great touch throw, floated it right over the defender. Corey Davis made a great, like, basket catch over his shoulder. It was a great play, and Mariota's been playing a lot better the last couple weeks. I'm not willing to say that all of a sudden he's an every week starter or anything like that, because I mean, over the past 2 years, we have a pretty big sample size of him not being a very great passer. We're relying a lot more on his legs for production. But Corey Davis, he's always been the kind of guy that I'd wanted to buy, because just like Jarvis Landry, the targets are there and the production typically follows those targets.
Yeah, I mean, first with Mariota, it does make a huge difference when you can apparently feel your hands, which Mariota couldn't earlier in the season. So he's looking a lot better lately. With Davis, I've said it repeatedly, I wanted to see it first. This was great. He looked good in this game. I was very impressed. I still think he's going to be certainly in that wide receiver three range. I don't think I'm willing to move him above that, which, again, is kind of interchangeable. If he does it again, I'll be excited, because he does have a good closing schedule. But for me, more of something where I had really discounted him for much of the season. And at this point, it sort of piques my interest, but I'm not really all that excited about him just yet. I want to see it one more time. I believe they play the Colts next week, so hopefully that's a big game. And speaking of the Colts, 29, Jaguars 26. We have, you know, I was a little surprised here. I kind of thought the Jaguars defense, again, every game I've been surprised about, I kind of thought the Jaguars defense would, you know, get it together on the bye. They'd regroup and they'd come out and they'd fire, and they really didn't. They did not look good. We talked already about how, you know, I can't believe you don't love Eric Ebron. What's wrong with you? Let's talk instead about the running game. Really disappointing effort from Marlon Mack. Just 12 carries for 29 yards on the ground. The Jags had struggled on defense lately, particularly against the run. It's not the best schedule coming up. They get the Titans. The Dolphins are fine, but then the Jaguars again, the Texans, the Cowboys. You had him at 18 rest of season coming into this game. Are you moving him down, or are you keeping him where he is?
Yeah, Mack's close to where he is. I mean, I wasn't expecting much out of him this game, to be honest with you. I mean, like, I think people started to overrate Mack a little bit. He was coming off games against the Jets, the Bills, and the Raiders, so it's not like it was a very tough schedule for him. That's the one thing I always wanted to keep in mind. I don't think Marlon Mack is the type of running back where you're going to consistently get, you know, 5 yards per carry like a Jamal Charles or something like that. He does play in a great offense, so he's going to get plenty of scoring opportunities, and that's always appealing. I also did think that the Jags defense would play better than they did this week. I think that part of it, though, we should give credit to Frank Reich for the offensive game plan. It was a lot of creative stuff that they were doing, including, you know, getting Eric Ebron the handoff, using him in like a slot receiver role. And it's probably something that I probably overlooked, to be honest with you, because like, Chester Rogers, he's been slipping down the depth chart. He hasn't been playing very many snaps. So when you look at the team, it's like Dontrell Inman, T.Y. Hilton, and Ryan Grant out there. Okay, maybe they mix in Ebron in the slot a little bit, and that's like a mismatch for the Jags roster. Like, they've struggled with receivers in the slot. So I probably should have looked at that a little closer. That's probably on me. But if I had known that Ebron was going to get three targets, I wouldn't have played him. But at the same time, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Jags defense, part of it's on play calling. They were playing a similar offense, actually, to the one that they just played in London against Doug Peterson and the Eagles. And I wondered about that. If like Frank Reich like contacted Doug Peterson during their bye week and was like, hey, could you give me anything on the Jags defense? Like, you know, how to attack them? Like, did you see any weaknesses? Like, would you do that if like you had coached for someone? Let's say you developed a friendship. Would you reach out to that coach and ask him? I would. Why the heck wouldn't you? I mean, I don't know if that's like a big no-no in the NFL where it's like you don't ask another coach to help you out, but why not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, I do want to say this because I feel like generally fantasy analysts, I don't really think you do it quite as much or I, but I think generally fantasy analysts, we're tough on coaches, right? Because there's a lot of things that we don't get and we don't understand and we feel like they ignore data that is right in front of their face. Frank Reich is an awesome coach. I've been totally impressed with him. The entire season, I think he's great. I think he's one of a handful of elite coaches in the NFL. On the other side of the ball, I mean, you had this Fournette situation completely nailed right from the get-go. You basically said he's going to step in. He's going to have the massive workload. He's going to dominate the game. And he did. 29 touches, 109 yards, 2 touchdowns. Surefire, rock solid RB1 going forward, correct?
Yep, that was my take. And the fact that I don't know what changed from Leonard Fournette. Like, from when people were drafting him in the first round this year, I don't know what changed from when he was coming back. Was it Carlos Hyde? Because that should have never been a concern. Carlos Hyde's not going to be able to run behind this offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think, frankly, I think people are just, you know, you want to see it. You want to see that the guy is healthy, especially since he came back already from the hamstring injury and didn't perform anywhere close to what he was capable of doing. So now...
And that's the thing. So I had Fournette ranked lower than I usually would have. So I do know that there was some risk in saying that. I think I had him ranked as like my number 13 running back, 14 running back this week. Had I known, like, if there was absolutely no risk at all, like zero, then I probably would have had him ranked as like the number 8 running back this week. But I knew that there was some risk. But again, like the whole hamstring thing, I think it was overblown just because the Jags knew what they were doing and knew that they couldn't bring him back before he was like legitimately 100%.
Yep. No, I think that that's a good idea. Dante Moncrief gets the revenge game. 4 targets, only 3 catches.
Yeah, it was 1 catch.
Yeah, 98 yards and a touchdown. But good for him. I like him. I hope you played him in DFS just because of the whole revenge game narrative. Let's look at the next game kind of quickly here. Chiefs 26, Cardinals 14. Really not a huge game for the Chiefs for anyone other than Tyreek Hill, who had a monstrous day, 117 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. With Sammy Watkins inactive with the foot injury, we kind of thought maybe Chris Conley would be a deep sleeper, but he just had 2 targets, 1 catch for 20 yards. Is it fair to say that this is essentially the way I would sum up the game for the Chiefs? They were just never really in danger of losing it, so they just kept it relatively conservative for them, and there's nothing to read into anything from this game.
It was like an Alex Smith game from last year.
Right.
And the thing is, you take away Sammy Watkins, and it's the same team.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And I really think, frankly, I think they could have done whatever they wanted to do at this point if they really needed to. But I just think, frankly, they kept it pretty conservative. Travis Kelce is still good. Kareem Hunt is still good. Patrick Mahomes is still good. On the Cardinals side of the ball, look, I know this is hot takey, buddy, but I think you should start your running backs against the Chiefs, okay? Going forward, I think, obviously, the Chiefs they allow the most fantasy points to opposing running backs. David Johnson, huge game, 21 carries, 98 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. Plus, and this is really what we're excited to see, 9 targets, 7 receptions, 85 yards, and 1 touchdown through the air. I told, you know, the Byron Leftwich, change of offensive coordinator, that's all we needed. I match up aside, you're elated, right, as a Johnson owner, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, keep in mind, this was a matchup where it really needed to be exploited, and they did. I mean, Josh Rosen wasn't very good. Like, he's just not mobile at all. Like, and his pocket awareness isn't great right now, so he's taking a lot of unnecessary sacks. He's throwing some interceptions. That offensive line's not great, but I like the way that they used him here, but there's still some game planning issues in terms of what they're doing with Josh Rosen. But David Johnson, it's definitely nice. But the thing is to know that the Chiefs, this is like just how bad the Chiefs have been against running backs. They have allowed 15 running backs to score 12 or more PPR points against them. That was coming into today. So now it's 16 All right. And that's through 10 games because they haven't had their bye yet. Okay. No other team in the NFL had allowed more than 10 running backs to achieve such feat. So it's a matchup that you just like legitimately pound your running backs against. And I figured with the bye week, Arizona could like clearly watch film and see that Kansas City has done great with receivers. They struggled with running backs. So to see him have a big game, it's not really surprising, but it's definitely reassuring to know that they're willing to use him in the passing game this much.
So let me ask you, in light of all that, you starting Todd Gurley next week against the Chiefs or?
I think you might want to bench him. Actually, what's funny about that is that that game is taking place on Monday night. So all of us that, you know, play the main slate in DFS, you're going to be left without the Rams and the Chiefs for the next 2 weeks because they're playing on Monday night and then they have their bye in week 12. So it's going to be just like legit depressing.
Oh, Tags, the bearer of bad news. No, I agree. Well, anyway, everything you've said, basically, I second. Let's move on very quickly to the Bills 41, Jets 10. We talked about this a lot, so here's what I'm going to do, Tags. I've got a stopwatch right now. You have 90 seconds to discuss whatever you want to discuss from this game, if even you need that long, and you can start right now.
I don't need to say anything. Like this is a game where I'd be more interested in your takes, to be honest with you, just because I'm frustrated with the way Quincy Enunwa has been used. He's playing on the perimeter, which is just bad. Jermaine Kearse is not very good. I don't know why he's out there. Isaiah Crowell, you know, touchdown or bust, basically. What can you take away from this game? Is it that you watched this entire game? What did you take away from it?
Okay, first of all, I appreciate that you think that much of my fandom, but even I did not watch all of this game because I really wanted to focus on other games that actually mattered. Look, what do you want, man? My takeaway is that this coaching staff is terrible and the team is completely dysfunctional, and I assume that they're going to have a new coach by the time they get off their bye week in week 11. It's absolutely going nowhere. You mentioned it. The Enunwa thing makes me want to rip my hair out because he's been incredibly successful in the slot. So when Kearse comes in, he plays a slot. So what do you do? Why don't you just move Enunwa to the outside? That makes no sense whatsoever. It is maddening, but frankly, I mean, I feel like, you know, my therapist will hear a lot about it this week. And by my therapist, I mean my wife, but still, whatever. On the Bills side, I can't even talk about the Jets anymore. On the Bills side of the ball, LeSean McCoy is a huge game, but you know, Matt Barkley, Josh Allen is going to be back after the bye. I assume that they will make him the starter again, unless they are somehow influenced by this Matt Barkley game. But other than LeSean McCoy, you are not starting anyone on the Bills, correct?
Correct. Abso-friggin-lutely. I did think that Zay Jones was like an interesting play this week. I will say that because the Jets have been just pounded. Buster Screen is terrible. And Zay Jones, 11 targets, 8 catches for 93 yards and a touchdown. I didn't have the cojones to play him in DFS, but I did like the matchup.
Yeah, well, with Matt Barkley at the helm, it didn't look like it was going to go quite as good as it did, but that was really just disgusting. We're going to move on at this point to the Redskins 16, Bucks 3. You know, almost equally unwatchable game, but for different reasons. I mean, look, if you started anyone on either of these teams other than maybe Josh Doctson, or Chris Godwin, who had 7 targets, 7 catches for 103 yards. Yeah, Doctson, 4 catches on 4 targets for 46 yards with the touchdown. You're probably pretty mad unless you started one of those two guys. So what do you want to say about this game, Tags, other than, oh boy, it was unwatchable?
It was actually one of the worst games of 2018 that I think I've watched.
Yeah.
And I watched quite a big deal. This one, Ryan Fitzpatrick continually made bad decisions, bad throws. There was one, a forward lateral pass. Like he was like 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. And then he just decided to throw the ball. Like he was straight D-gaffing it out there. And that's the thing is like, if you watch that game, it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like the whole Fitzmagic thing is cute. And it was a fun story to follow. And even though he threw for 400 yards, he had a bad game. He had a terrible game. And the offense was never really the problem. So I have no idea why Dirk Koetter took away the offensive play calling duties from Unkin. But yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick, there's a reason he's been passed from team to team. There's a reason he's not going to just develop into a franchise quarterback. I mean, what season was he in? Like, he has to be closing in on 10 seasons, right?
Yeah, I think so. Even more than that, frankly. I don't know how many teams he's played for. 7, 8? I don't even know. Whatever. Kudos to the guy who's had a nice career. But yeah, if you're relying, Tags, I do the trade chart every week, and one of the guys, you know, people interact with me about it, which I love, by the way. And one of the things a guy asked me was like, well, you know, why isn't Fitz on the trade chart? And I was sort of taken aback a little bit. I was like, number one, don't trade for a quarterback, which I basically say every single time. You know, just you can stream your way to a championship without question. But number two, this is why Fitz is not on the trade chart. I mean, I don't know if he's going to start next week necessarily, but regardless, this is always a possibility coming in. So if you're relying on Ryan Fitzpatrick, it just don't, you know, really don't. You basically have to have no other option.
Yeah, you might not have a starter the next time they play.
Yes. That is also true. Chargers 20, Raiders 6. This game just ended right as we started going. Look, for the Chargers, kind of, I don't really think there's all that much to discuss. Kind of a pedestrian game from Rivers. He just didn't need to do much. He does throw two touchdown passes, but just 223 yards touching. Melvin Gordon, in case you didn't know, is a complete stud. he does have the touchdown through the air. Keenan Allen, our boy, continues his second half surge right now. 9 targets, 6 catches, 57 yards and touchdown. Anything from the Chargers side of the ball?
No, not really. I mean, this was a divisional game, and that's the thing is, like, Rivers, I didn't know how to trust Rivers this week, just because it's like there are so many things that you could do against the Raiders defense, you know, with the wildfires out there in California. They said the air was, like, not very good. The Raiders couldn't practice outside. There were a lot of X factors in this game. So, I mean, to see Rivers not have, like, the greatest game in a divisional showdown, it doesn't surprise me. It seems like the Chargers always have difficulty in division. And the Chargers have these games from time to time anyway. Like, I talked about that. Like, do you remember the game, like, I think it was 2 years ago when the Browns hadn't had a win all season, and then they ended up winning was it a week 17 game against the Chargers or week 16 where they won? The Chargers lost that game to the Browns and gave Hugh Jackson a win. That was like one of his 2 wins in, I think, Browns.
And kept his job for another year and a half.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But yeah, the Chargers are just known to do this from time to time. I don't want to take away too much.
Honestly, I think if they needed to, he could have had a much bigger day. That's really, in the end, what I think it was. I mean, they didn't pull away, really, until in the second half, but I do think that push comes to shove, they could have done a lot more. On the other side of the ball, just blech. I mean, if that's what you want to say about the Raiders, is there anything? Are you starting anybody on the Raiders going forward?
I mean, Doug Martin's like a better version of Peyton Barber, I think. I mean, like, they're both guys that are going to receive 15 carries per game or 15 touches per game, however way you want to look at it. And Doug Martin has been somewhat okay on the touches that he's received as the starter. Jalen Richard is an okay PPR option. He saw another 6 targets today, caught 5 balls for 52 yards. So it just really depends on what you're looking for. There's nobody that's going to win you a league here, that's for sure, including Jared Cook. Like, people want to continue to rank Jared Cook. I think he was the number 4 tight end in the rankings this week, and I didn't understand it. I don't understand why people continue to play him. Have we not watched this guy for his entire career? Do we not know that he's going to have big games from time to time? He's a big freak athletically, but he's not a great football player. And Derek Carr is just Derek Carr. He actually threw the ball into the ground on 4th down.
Oh, I saw that. I know. I thought I was, because I had it on mute because we were preparing for the podcast, and I thought that I was mistaken, that it must have been 3rd down or something.
I looked back to the screen. I was like, wait a minute. Did they just change the graphic to go to 4th down now, or did he just do that on 4th down? And sure enough, he did that on 4th down.
Yeah, no, he's playing terribly. The entire offense is playing terribly. Look, if you want 15 carries for 60 yards, Doug Martin's your guy. Other than that, I would be avoiding. Packers 31, Dolphins 12. Not a huge fantasy day from Aaron Rodgers, but he definitely looked healthier than I've seen him look in a long time. I think he may have shed the knee brace.
I think ever since their bye, he ditched it. So against the Rams, I think he ditched the brace.
Yeah, he looked great. And I mean, Aaron Jones, this is it. It's done. 15 carries, 145 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, where is he rest of season for you?
He's someone that I debated putting ahead of Trubisky for the biggest winner of the week, just because Aaron Jones was, after him fumbling on the potential go-ahead drive for the Packers against the Patriots, I was worried because Mike McCarthy has done dumber things. Let's be honest. He's done dumber things than leave Aaron Jones on the bench for Jamal Williams, who's plodding along. But it was reassuring to see him come out and get 15 carries to 3 carries for Jamal Williams. Jones got all 5 targets. Williams didn't see any targets in the passing game. So it's clear this is Aaron Jones' backfield. And we saw Eddie friggin' Lacy, who's out of the NFL right now, finishes a top 5 running back multiple times in this offense. So regardless of Mike McCarthy's ineptitude as a coach, I do think he's fired at the end of this year, by the way. If not before then, if they get eliminated from the playoff race, I think he gets fired. But Aaron Jones he's right in that Nick Chubb territory. Like, he plays in a better offense. He may not see the guaranteed work that Chubb does in terms of that much volume, but Aaron Jones is definitely up there. Like, I'd probably put him as my number 15 or 16 running back the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'll have him right around there. It was really, really encouraging that in a game that they largely controlled, Jamal Williams saw just 3 carries. I mean, it's Jones's backfield. He completely has trust. And, you know, I think all fantasy owners and Aaron Rodgers are hoping that Mike McCarthy gets fired. Everybody except for Terry Bradshaw, who I don't know if you ever saw that one.
Yeah, but I did.
Yeah, Terry Bradshaw, in case you didn't ever see that clip, he basically essentially said that if he had to choose between Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, he would choose Mike McCarthy.
Terry Bradshaw's just mad that Aaron Rodgers is better, like, 10 times better than the quarterback he was. Terry Bradshaw wasn't even that good.
I think in the end, no matter who you root for, and I take solace in this as a Jets fan, you can just at least feel happy about the fact that Terry Bradshaw is not your GM.
he could be John Elway. That could be worse.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair. On the other side of the ball, I mean, the Dolphins continue their trend of not scoring an offensive touchdown since the Nixon administration. Essentially, at this point, they scored 12 points, all field goals. Kenyon Drake, I believe, left the game with a shoulder injury, but I think he came back in towards the end, but he doesn't get much work. Frank Gore dominates the carries. What do you want to say about this dumpster fire of a situation?
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad.
That you could stop there, Dax. I mean, I'm not kidding. They're, you know, if you want to take away anything, go ahead. But
Devontae Parker, I mean, like, so Brock Osweiler missed him on a couple throws. Devontae Parker dropped another one or two. Like, he didn't look very good this game. Kenny Stills is not being utilized in the offense down the field, which is kind of crazy because the Packers secondary is hurting right now. I thought they could have used him there. Kenyon Drake saw one less target than Frank Gore. Yes, he left the game for a little bit, but if he returned, I'm so tired of it. Like, Frank Gore had a 39-yard run, which is the reason he wound up with 90 yards on the ground, but
and that was like right off the bat, right? Wasn't that his first carry or something like that? He had some huge carry.
Yeah, it was the start of the game. It was in the first quarter. It was an ugly game by this offense. I think they have to go back to Ryan Tannehill, because it's just kind of like Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, like Osweiler came out of the gate, played well against the Bears and the Lions. I won't take that away from him. He played, and then he's really struggled the last 3 weeks. Like, he hasn't played well at all.
Oh, I mean, Tags, I'll be honest. That is the grossest understatement I've ever heard. He misses guys, wide open guys, by a ridiculous amount. Sometimes you watch just as a casual fan, and you're like, I don't understand. Your whole life has been about throwing the football. How is it possible that you can overthrow a guy by 20 feet when he's right there? But, you know, the one thing I will say, to the extent you're trying to maintain any optimism on the Dolphins, I mean, there's a lot of conflicting reports about Tannehill. I know he said that he's aiming to come back after the Week 11 bye. I think it's against the Colts, but I have heard a lot of things that suggest that that is not going to happen. And it may be Brock Osweiler for, you know, whether it's the rest of the season or for the foreseeable future. So it's not a good situation, unfortunately. I hope Tannehill comes back, which could make certain players on that team useful, but I would not expect it. Final game, and this was still going on as we started recording, Rams 36, Seahawks 31. Pretty exciting game, actually. You mentioned Cooper Kupp. I don't know if there has been any word. You'll probably have word by tomorrow. It did not look good. I mean, it looked like a non-contact injury. You know, Brandon Cooks has the big game. He has 100 yards receiving. He also scores on the rushing touchdown. What do you want to take away here from the Rams?
Oh, man, that they overcame a really tough matchup. The Seahawks have been playing phenomenal football this year. Their defense especially, you know, talking about the defenses, I really can't get over what they've overcome this year with all the losses they've had on defense. They don't have the big name brands anymore, but they've been playing phenomenal. So to see them, you know, somewhat, I mean, I don't want to say that like they held them in check this week, but that's what I'm saying. It's like Sean McVay kind of overcomes this, and like he can play against any defense in the world. It's gotten to the point where it's like when I go through the matchups for the week and I look at things, it's like you almost want to take out what the Rams have done against a defense, because they do it against everyone. And you know, like when I have to say something like this team has allowed 7 wide receiver one performances, but 3 of them came to the Rams, so they're actually technically probably a pretty good defense. It's really tough. Like, Sean McVay is making my life harder. I just want to say that. But he's such a good play caller. I think Tony Romo said it best. And that's why Tony Romo, I really wonder if he would be a phenomenal coach. I think he's a great booth analyst, and he was talking about it during that game. I always try and listen to Romo when I can. But he is someone, he was saying that McVay, he only runs so many plays. He's like, honestly, I think you can cut down his playbook to like 7 plays that he'll run. And what he does is he has different variations of who the ball is going to go to. And it's just like, if you run the same thing over and over, the defense is going to trend towards that. And they're just going to flip the play to someone else. And like, they do it so well, and they keep you guessing. And even though this offense is so concentrated in the fact that Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp produce every single week, and Todd Gurley, defenses still can't stop them. Like, they legitimately can't do it. And it's a miracle to watch. Sean McVay is kind of like he's a genius in the NFL. And I don't think you should be scared to play these guys against any defense in the NFL.
No, certainly not. And I mean, the Monday night game next week, you mentioned it, against the Chiefs. It's going to be so fun. There are a lot of exciting offenses, frankly. I mean, McVay is great. Sean Payton, of course, continues to, this is the best the Saints offense has looked at in forever, basically, from when I can recall. The Chiefs offense is phenomenal. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting time, frankly, on the offensive side of the ball. On the other side, you know, the Seahawks, you know, it's a pretty nice game from the play callers, but the thing we'll focus on is, you mentioned it, I believe, in your waiver wire column, your early pickups was Rashad Penny. Chris Carson was out on this one. Mike Davis got 11 carries, but Rashad Penny looked awesome 12 carries, 108 yards, and a touchdown. Is Rashad Penny the back to own in Seattle going forward?
I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I could tell you that. I really wish I could, because the Seahawks, they are going to be playing on Thursday Night Football this week against the Packers. So you kind of, I mean, I wish we knew. It'd be nice if Chris Carson remained out with that hip injury. And I tend to think that he is going to be out. He didn't practice this past week. I know he was a game time decision, but I don't think he was ever going to play. And knowing that the game's on Thursday, I don't know if he does this week, but you run the risk of him leaving again with another injury. This is a backfield that I hate being a part of. Like, I hate having any stock in this backfield because you never know what they're going to do. But knowing that Rashad Penny looked so good, it's difficult to keep them off the field. Like, he was their first round pick. I mean, if they continue to leave him on the bench, they just look dumber as a franchise. So it's like, you might as well put him out there and let him play.
Well, management obviously wants him to play. That's why they drafted him necessarily. And I agree. I really didn't think Chris Carson had much of a chance to play. I know they kept it kind of close to the vest, but I probably won't have Penny ranked the highest of the Seattle backs, but I really would not be shocked if he is the most valuable going forward. The only other thing I'll mention about this game, Russell Wilson continues to be incredibly efficient, which hits touchdown rate. But the great thing about it was 9 carries for 92 yards, and that really is what you want to see. For me, what's been holding me back from pushing Wilson back up to that upper echelon is the fact that he hasn't run. And last week, I think he ran for something like 41, 42 yards or something. And this week, he put it on even more. So that's a really good sign if you're a Russell Wilson owner.
I'm pretty mad about Russell Wilson, what he did today, because I had him ranked outside my top 12 quarterbacks. And I said that there was a lot of quarterbacks I'd play over him, because in division over the last 2 years, like, and now it's actually, we could extend this to 10 games in the division over the last 2 years, he has not thrown for more than 238 yards. Touchdowns were always going to regress for him. But the 92 rushing yards, that's what did me in. I'm going to be screwed in the expert accuracy competition, because he put up 28 fantasy points. That hurts.
Well, you were number one last week, I believe, so you can afford the little hit. And frankly, Russell Wilson, if you're listening, you are on Mike Tagliare's bad list. So, you know, get a hold of yourself.
But he's on a lot of my teams, though, and I benched him, so I'm sorry.
Well, there's mixed emotions over here, buddy, so we'll have to see. Well, that's it for today's show. Before we go, I do want to remind everyone about the Dalvin Cook signed helmet giveaway. Just go to fantasypros.com/contest, which will show you how to sign up for our YouTube channel and be entered into the contest. Remember, that giveaway is all because of pristineauction.com. You can find a ton of great items up for auction every day. Just go to pristine auction.com. Also, thank you to Lisa Mattress. Remember, with our offer code, you can get $160 off a Lisa Mattress. Just go to lisa.com/fantasypros. That's LEESA.com/fantasypros. On behalf of everyone here at Fantasy Pros, thanks for listening and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen.
It's up, it's up.
And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy duty rotisserie or rust resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.